either to affirm an existing comment or to provide a new comment, whatever whatever your feedback is, we want to hear.
Okay. So with that, should I go to my left or right tonight? I don't know. I'm gonna go to the right. I think there's more of you on the right.
Could you say the names when you hand the mic over? When you listen to the audio, when you don't say a person's name, like when I was on a commission, you said Commissioner Antonini. So when the audio does not pick up the name of the person who's speaking, just a suggestion.
What we could do is identify ourselves as we eat dinner.
Yeah, it's
helpful. This is Kate Favetti. This is regarding just overall consistency. One is, in a broad sense, I was concerned about the disabled community and whether or not we have adequately mentioned and have been consistent throughout this document with regard to some of the, with regard to some of the issues related to disabilities. Specifically, on page 4, for example, we very specifically state that in the parameter principle 2, item E, identify effective partners, etc., such as seniors physically and developmentally disabled adults. On page 17, under City College, we also specifically state related to transportation parameters, including access for people with disabilities. However, when we look at public realm, and I don't know if what we are doing, and that would be on page 7, and specifically principle 3, for example, and this is just an example, we ensure safe and accessible opportunities for people of all ages, including students, seniors, and families. Are we adequately addressing the disabled community? And further, with regard to the transportation parameters, we address the idea that there's pedestrian and bicycle access. Are we adequately addressing wheelchair access? Is it implied, or do we need to be more specific? And that was what I was concerned about throughout the document, and whether or not this really addresses some of the issues of the disabled community. The other, that's one concern. The other concern I had, it would be on page 5, and it relates to principle number 1, item number F, respect the privacy and scale of all neighboring properties, including Westwood Park, Sunnyside, City College. And I believe we said City College, Ocean Avenue, and other adjacent residences, and that concept should be consistent throughout the entire parameters so that they are specifically mentioned, the neighborhoods are specifically mentioned. And I don't have specific examples, but just to make sure that happened.
Search.
Right. So that's where that is necessary. The other was on page 22, and that was relating to the green roof issue, and that would be principle 4, item number B. I thought we had specifically had serious concerns about prioritizing living green roofs, and I actually thought we had removed it, but put in more generalized or softer language there. So I was a little bit concerned about that. And then, of course, I was concerned that the recent resolution that was approved by the City College Board of Trustees on the 28th of July was adequately represented in this document. But I will leave those comments to our nice new colleague from City College. So those are my other, and I have some additional comments, but I will save those for a little bit later, okay? And I'm passing the mic to
Robert Neubauer. Generally, I think this thing is starting to hang together. After a while, you've seen it so often that you don't even know what you're looking at. But you know, having some time, set it aside, look at it, it's beginning to hang together. My interest has always been that whenever you think of this complex, you think of neighborhood. And you think of connections with public transit, because if we're going to try to achieve those reductions of parking, it just has to be all over the place. So towards that end, under the public realm, I would still like to see something right at the front end, the first two sentences of connections to public transit. You have words like functional, can't remember what page that is on.
5.
Yes. provides a range of programmed and unprogrammed spaces for functional, recreational, social activities. And I still think that somewhere linkage to transit should be right up front. It's mentioned throughout the document, but I think the more you mention it, the more it becomes apparent to whoever's going to build here that this is really, really important. Then moving on to transportation, I want to refer to page 13 under B or principle 2. This is a section that's extremely complicated. I mean, you're talking about a TDM, which we haven't seen yet, and now we're talking about addressing creative transportation incentives that would meet this TDM. Now, this could be all smoke and mirrors if it's not done right, or it could be meaningful. So towards that end, I think we should have something in there where the TDM and the plan's effectiveness in meeting those strategies are evaluated in some way. And I'm talking about hard data. You know, how are people really getting out of the car? Is it surveys? Is it something? But not hyperbole. I mean, real functional data that you can see from year to year if these measures are indeed working. And that's the extent of my comments. Oh, and I'm going to pass the baton over to Bridget.
This is Bridget Davila, and I'm a trustee for City College. And some of you might be aware that we did just pass a resolution. It went through several iterations, and we passed a resolution regarding what we would like to see coming from the Balboa any Balboa Reservoir development that would exist. So I don't know if you want me to talk about that now or later. Do you want me to talk about it out at the end or now?
Well, what?
It relates to the...
Okay, well, it does. Let me just do two things. I'll just quickly say that there are parts that are, many of the parts are not included here, but they're not, they're not adding anything new. They're fleshing it out more. So pretty much everything that we passed fleshes the things that we've already done out more and talks about how these parameters might specifically relate to City College, any kind of building.
Do you mind if we jump in?
Yeah.
Hi, Emily Les with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. Yeah, Emily Les with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development.
Sorry, I'm, what, where?
Emily Les.
Got the Emily.
Office of Economic and Workforce Development.
Thank you.
It is a mouthful, sorry. So just briefly, I want to say that on the staff level, we've talked about the idea of attaching that resolution in its entirety to the RFP so that it sits side by side with the parameters and prospective developers can look at both of them. So I, you know, hopefully knowing that can inform the suggestions that you guys want to make about the City College parameters of this set.
Okay, well that said, I will say that there are some things I've kind of been hammering away at that I don't see in here. And one of the issues was regarding the parking garage. I don't see that in here, although I see alluded to with the discussion about what we're going to do about parking and trying to reduce the number of parking spots and trying to make transportation better. But I don't see anything specifically on what we're calling a green parking garage, which could include a lot of these car sharing parking spaces and so on. And the other thing is, it would be nice if everybody's parking surveys and TDMs could coordinate. I think that would be extremely important, and maybe we want to mention that in here because I know our facilities is going to be doing one, or they've done one already, and then I know there's another one by Supervisor Norman Yee, and I'm not sure how many else are hanging out there, but it would be really great to coordinate them because I think that's extremely important to know who is parking, when they're parking, how they're parking, why they're parking. All of those things before we make any decisions about that. Okay, so that was in transportation. I'm sorry, I'm kind of skipping around here. So going back to urban design and neighborhood character, I see a mention of the community.
What page?
I'm sorry, page 11, principle 4. C is the only place where I see City College campus talking about designing the site with the City College campus in mind. And I believe I missed this one, or I was on the phone or something. But this is important to me because we do have an incredibly beautiful building right there in the Science Building. And we will have an incredibly beautiful Performing Arts Center. The other buildings, I would prefer that they not try to match those. But
just maintain them.
Yes. Or coordinate with those. But I think that to the extent that we possibly can, we should capitalize on the things that City College does have here and that does bring to this community. And I wanted to say something, and I apologize for skipping around. So let me go to
your number.
Going to the housing. Page 3. And this is an overall comment, so I don't need to pull out any particular one, but I don't see anything here, even though I've been hammering away at this for a long time, about focusing on faculty housing for the affordable housing. I would like to see that at least mentioned. Where?
Principal 2, number D.
Consider part of 2000 to allocate on-site units on page 4.
Okay, well then, let me back up a little bit and say I'd like to emphasize that more. And
so Bridget,
yeah.
I'm gonna agree with you. I think this should be stronger language.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. I don't have to go into how teachers all qualify for affordable housing at all of these levels, which I did not know, by the way, until this CAC. I did not know that I qualify for affordable housing. That's how bad it is. So I just want everybody to understand that. And sustainability, so one of the things that we have at San Francisco State, which my colleague Robert here is representing, his shirt.
The red one's dirty.
Okay. I think, we want to use sustainable energy as much as possible here. We do have I don't know if it's an advantageous site or not, but we do have a lot of wind here. So I would like to see us being able to use that, and furthermore, if we could create like student projects in the engineering program, which we do at San Francisco State, that kind of illustrates what we were doing, I think that would contribute a lot to the community when people are going on walks and they'd be able to see that. I don't even know if wind is possible here, but there sure is a lot of wind, so I'd really like to investigate that. And the last one that caught my attention. Oh, I think I went all around. So wind was under the sustainability and number 20, and I didn't pop out at me, so it may be in there already.
I think we talked about wind more in terms of planting trees and doing things, taking wind into consideration, but not the idea of, because we have this natural resource called wind, how might we use it as a sustainable resource?
Okay. Let me turn this over to my colleague, Maria Picard.
Hi, I'm Maria Picard, local resident, all my community. I just wanted to address public realm, priority principle 1,
page
5, C, consider the childcare facility that may be built on its site. Did we discuss it actually being built, or is it may be built? Because that language probably needs to change.
The childcare
facility may be built, yeah.
I may be able to respond to that at the end.
Yeah, because I think that's very important, and I talked about this before, how it's important for working families to have a decent childcare facility, so you can actually also improve the population of City College, because a lot of people that are working do need childcare. Back to Bridget.
No, I was just going to say that Bridget Davila. I was going to address this at the end. When I talk about our resolution, because that's still included in that.
Okay.
Let's go back.
Hi, Christie Godinez is representing Lake Meridian High School. I have a few just logistic, municipal questions. So in the whole background, I thought it would be interesting to include where what constituents we represent, because there are a lot of groups that aren't represented in this whole these sessions that we've had, and I think that that's important to know. I was also thinking about just like the layout of how they're laid out. So housing is first, public realm, is that done intentionally? Because I think it really does influence what you think is most important, at least for me when I was looking at it. And I appreciated City College being mentioned throughout all the different parameters, and I'm eager to see also more of the other community schools being communities being mentioned as well, because there's a lot of schools within this area. It's not just City College. But I did appreciate seeing City College throughout this document.
John Winston, I'm at large. See, I think the whole thing connects really well. You know, looking at this these documents separately in a siloed way was interesting, because when you look at it all together, it's you see how things balance each other out. For instance, last meeting we talked about open space and how maybe we want more open space, but then when you look at it as a whole, you see that, well, maybe we'll have to have higher heights as a result, or things, maybe not, but things have to balance. And when you look at it as a whole, I want to echo what Robert said about connections to transit being really important all through the document, but especially in housing and then the transportation section. You know, this whole thing hinges on transit, and there's the TDM. We haven't seen the TDM yet, but we have seen some leaks of some parts of it have been released as far as the surveys that have been done on campus, and it turns out that 40% of the people who come to school here drive to school, park in the parking lot. Half of those people, if they thought there was a better way to get to school, they would try an alternative. But they don't see the alternatives, and that's what our challenge is. And I think that what Robert said is really integral to that whole piece of the puzzle, and it's a linchpin. City College also coming. It does show up in multiple areas in here, but our communication with City College, despite the fact that we actually have a representative on our committee, it's really opaque sometimes, trying to find out what the plans are. I went to several of us in the audience, and myself, we were at the in this room last week to the facilities outreach that they put on, and it was a really good get together. And I think I learned a lot, and they learned a lot as well. The people that were looking for our opinions, but there were some surprises. For instance, there's going to be a childcare facility on campus at the other end of the campus, nowhere near the reservoir. I didn't know that. They didn't know that that we have it in our parameters.
Temporary right now.
Well, okay, but it's I didn't know about. I didn't know there was going to be a new building built, an administrative building right at the other end of this building. I guess a small building. The little things that I just didn't know about, and they seem to put less emphasis on the art center than I expected. So I'm not sure where that falls in the hierarchy of priorities. I want to reiterate that I want to see it personally, but that's that. I guess that's really all I have to say. You know, I think basically the whole thing holds together really well. The order of things, maybe it could be tweaked a little bit, but I think it's a good roadmap to where we're going. I don't really see any serious glaring problems.
Thank you, John. Lisa Stanali, Studies Neighborhood Association. So I'm going to start off. And John Winston was member at large. So I'm going to start off by, I've got some questions, and then I have a recommendation, and then I'm going to go into some detailed comments. So the first thing is, if I were a developer looking to put something forward as a proposal, the traffic data is really important.
And my question is, what traffic data will they have made, traffic and parking data? What information is going to be readily available to potential bidders' fingertips to be able to, what are they going to have to work with? Because the TDM study is going to be down the road. I know we're doing it in a parallel construction, but I want to understand what data will they have to be able to work with to at least be able to get a baseline. And then, and because we know that the traffic is a huge issue. And then the second thing is to understand how the TDM is going to fit into the planning and the RFP process and its future efforts. So really understanding that. So it'd be great for the next meeting to get answers to those questions so that we can really be eyes wide open around how we're doing it. So those are my requests for more information. I think that there's, to your point, Christine, and to somebody else's point about around the background piece, I actually think we need a preamble. And that preamble really needs to be the context-setting piece for the developer to be able to understand what we're talking about trying to attempt to do in the neighborhood. And I think we think of it as a three-legged stool, that it's about housing, which is what we are hoping to be able to do. It's about City College and making sure that we are supporting City College, and it's about the local community and the neighborhood impact, and that's about transportation and parking. And I think I've said this from the beginning, that if we think we're going to build something that's going to make it crippling for people to be able to get to and from anywhere, we can't bring housing in if we can't figure out a way to do it, if it's going to create more congestion. I mean, it's just, it's ludicrous, and I, in my role as the chair, I will eat my hat, so to speak, on it, because that is the number one thing around the implications that it's going to have on the neighborhood. So how we really see this is going to be really important in terms of, like, we're laying out the principles, we're laying out the parameters, and the question becomes, can we come up with, you know, I want to see my cup as half full, that there's something that we're going to be able to do, and we're going to really be able to make it work and be able to meet the different constituent needs. And at the same time, anybody who's going to be bidding on this needs to understand clearly that if it's, you know, that if it's going to be pie in the sky, or if it's not going to really take into consideration what the true implications are for the neighborhood, the pendulum's going to swing the other way, and the neighborhoods will come out and say, there's absolutely no way we want to have anything built here because you're being irresponsible and it's not being done well. So I think it's really important to set that context up front in a preamble. I think, Christine, to your point about having it be clear who was on the CAC, who was not on the, you know, who we are, and really laying that out. And I think there's even kind of a graphic that goes with it. So that's my overall kind of philosophical piece. When we get into the actual document on page one, I actually think that the proposed principles and parameters are out of order. I actually think that transportation should be number two, because housing is what the project is about, but if we don't address the transportation issues, I think it would be, it's not what we have been trying to work towards, and I think that the transportation piece is huge in terms of both what we can do on the supply side to create more, but also understanding what the demand side currently looks like and what the demand side could be to really understand the complete picture of what will happen. And then on page three, under principle one, a question which would be good to know for next time, sorry, I should have done this earlier, is if values of property drop significantly, would there be a need to change the parameter A? And I don't know how that works or what the history or context is for that. So understanding, you know, what the percentages are, does that stay consistent? But if we have a downturn in the economy, which could happen, what would that mean? And then under principle 1A, number three, I think that the last word should read, enable the project to reach or exceed. It should be meet or succeed. Reach seems to give you the idea like you're reaching for it. It doesn't mean you actually have to attain it. I agreed about the language about partnering with City College under Principle 2, D, on page 4. I think there is something wrong with on public realm, Principle 1C. I think there's something wrong with the grammar around consider the child care facility that may be built. It's a very vague reference. Yeah. I think it would be a lot stronger as to what we mean by that. And then similarly on page six, point G, building enough flexibility to the open space network. I have no idea what an open space network is, and it would be great to know what that is. Is that the network of the 2 acre park and the street? Like, what do we mean by that? I think under H, it's Mount Davidson. Is it Mount Bruno or is it San Bruno Mountain? I don't know what Mount. Is it San Bruno Mountain? Because I've never heard it referred to as Mount Bruno.
No, it's not San Bruno Mountain.
It's San Bruno Mountain. Great. And thank you to the committee. This is the work of many. And then to Kate's point earlier on page eight, principle 5D, I thought we were moving away from the green roof concept, because the reasons that we discussed. And then on page 10, principle 2C, we've got ranges that we've set for the height of buildings. And the one thing to know is that the Performing Arts Center is going to be a two-story building, so probably need to take that into consideration as well. Page 12, principle 1A, I think that we need to put where it says residential parking spaces may be a part of shared parking facilities. I think that we should clarify that to say some residential parking, because we know it's not going to be all. Then under principle 1C, it should read, describe an appropriate parking and transportation demand plan system that accommodates all appropriate City College students. Because I want it to be more ample.
Be more what?
Ample. Because the fact that registration is down right now, we want to make sure that we're covering it as, because we don't want it, we don't want the transportation to be a hindrance to helping the enrollment get back to where we all desire it to be.
Can I ask a clarification?
Yeah.
So the principal at the top, it says meeting City College enrollment goals. I guess I would ask for clarification on what appropriate students and employees are.
Yeah.
Like if you're not in this room, you might not
have any. Yeah.
But
so,
we can work some of
it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess I just want to make sure that we are looking at it as a growing concern and not a declining concern. And then under D, you know, looking at these best TDM practices, what does that mean in the context of being a commuter school? John, to your point that the survey said they may try, you know, that they would be open to trying another form of transportation. Digging down, you're really understanding how does TDM work given that so many of our students are commuters. On page 14, under the transportation principle, I think we talked about removing the, so under 2D, page 14, halfway down, ensuring a safe and convenient path of travel between on-site bicycle facilities and existing facilities on Ocean and Phelan. We've talked about removing the bike lanes on Phelan, and that's not noted anywhere, and I think that was one of the things that we've talked about is part of the congestion problem on Phelan is because we're down to one road in each, so I think, what are we talking about Phelan? Yeah. And then there's one consistency thing which we hit in a couple different places, which is in that same part D, providing a bicycle repair facility on site, and then if not in conflict with the community benefits, if we decide we're going to put some kind of a bicycle repair shop or a bicycle shop as part of the commercial first floor, just making sure we're being consistent. Let me see if there's anything else. Page 15 at the very top of the page. I know at one point we talked about the idea of making sure all the parking spots were wired. The plug may not be there, but the infrastructure for it would be there, so it would be ready. And I know we talk about it in sustainability, but it might be worth noting there. And let me see. On page 17, principle 1B, think we need to add, phase and schedule construction activity, dot, 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 as well, and at the end, including City College and future City College construction projects. To be clear, because that's gonna come into play. And then on page 19, we've got principle 4B, assume the Performing Arts Center is going to be built. And I think we have to call it parking more than just about as a part of the overall TDM strategy. I think we need to say, and I don't know if this is kind of bridge I'm turning to a little bit around just the importance of the parking, because I think there were some assumptions that the Performing Arts Center was just gonna use the parking that's currently there for, that it's fully understood across the board at City College that this parking issue is gonna be a big one. We want people to come and use the facility.
I know.
And then I think that is those are my comments. Oh, I have one last one. Page 25. Principle 1E, I think we should say we should identify additional opportunities and partners, because I think it would be helpful to see who the developer is thinking about having be their partners for those opportunities. I think that'll give us a better sense. And I would like to just close by saying thank you to everybody for feedback, for tracking changes, doing multiple versions of documents, and just all the hard work that's gone into this, because it's quite a feat to have done this as a community input process. So I'm going to turn to you.
Formosa Park. And now that you mentioned the idea of adding a preamble, we ought to also include legal requirements. And those legal requirements, among those, there's a number of them. What is of particular interest to Westwood Park is the RACD and design, so that is upfront and part of the document. And although that's been a part of the legal requirements that's been identified in other sections, it should be a part of this document, and perhaps right after the preamble. Further, just as a comment, the Westwood Park Association and its residents, the 315 that have responded to its survey in July or in January of 2016, would have liked to have seen a specific number of units, 500 units, incorporated in this particular document. They would have liked to have seen a real, very stronger statement with regard to the park, that although it says strive to have a 2-acre park, and perhaps at a minimum a 1.5, it does not say, it does not require it, and that's part of what the Park Association and its residents have indicated. They wanted to have it specific about the fact that they would like to have 28 feet on the western section of, as far as the height requirement. And although there is a general desire to have a maximum of 40 feet for the height overall for the entire development. Further, that there would be a higher percentage than 33% of the amount of the 33% should be allocated to the middle class. That would be between 120% and 150% of the AMI. Further, again, although there is a specific statement in here with regard to a mixture of home ownership and rental, there is a strong desire to have a large section that would be home ownership. The residents are very strongly supporting a one-to-one parking requirement, which is not addressed, and although there is a lot of concern on many different levels, including the resolution from CCSF Board of Trustees, that there be no development until the parking situation is, with regard to the CCSF students and the loss of the 1,000 parking places for them. That is something that has to be resolved before any development is ever designed. So with regard to the legal requirements, I do believe that it should be incorporated as part right after the preamble, and as well as those other comments that the neighborhoods have strongly, the neighborhood that is directly abutting this project has strongly advocated.
Okay, so thank you, everybody, and
it's a lot.
Yep. Are you gonna enter that into the record too?
Yes, I am.
Great.
Thank you. So I think now let's move to public comment. So if, as we do at every meeting, if you would kindly line up, you have 2 minutes. And again, focus on how the document hangs together, inconsistencies, consistencies, or things that you left out. Thank you.
Okay, I can hi. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, I'm David Tejeda. I'm a long-term resident. I, number one, want to thank the committee. You did a great job. I really was really impressed with everything. Thank you for the improvements. The one minor issue that was discussed here last week about one of the help to resolution, the plumbing, the transit problems would be facilitated by a shuttle that would be permanently here all the time, ADA compliant with the bike rack on the front. And that was a minor thing, but that seemed to be really liked by everybody that was here last, I think it was Wednesday. So thank you on that. The one on sustainability, to the best of my knowledge, this building is totally geothermal power, the building we're in, and I see no reason that that couldn't be facilitated into the new building also. One more suggestion regarding City College is at the beginning to help the enforcement issue, the parking situation, highly recommend that DPT be involved whenever, once this process starts, and every time DPT be known that they get an active notification from City College. We have a semester starting, and for the first 2 weeks, enforce all the parking laws because it will help everybody get used to it.
Yeah.
Right,
they're very efficient.
Yeah.
Right, and they work, because I live, like I said, half a block from City College on this side, so I have a very strong opinion on it. But thank you for listening to us. Thank you for doing a really good job.
Anita Gill Harris, Westwood Park Association. We can't speak on the individual parameters, but I respectfully have a correction with our representative Kate Favetti's testimony about 40, that our neighborhood wants 40 feet. Specifically, what our neighborhood said was that the city staff says 500 units on the BR site is only a starting point, not the maximum. Our recommendation was a maximum of 500. Well, just to be clear, the maximum of 500 units is part of the larger Balboa Park Station area plan. Remember that one, the plan, which already agreed to a 65% increase in population density for the plan area. Another correction is the height. You said 40 feet. Our specific, what the residents have studied and feel would be a good project for both the residents of Westwood Park and the need for housing. We said, how high should the new buildings be? The current zoning for the site is 40 feet across the site with a small portion on the eastern boundary of 65 feet. The city wants 25 feet, I don't know if that's changed, but this was our survey, on the western part, up to 85 feet on the eastern part. I believe we came down to 65. Your WPA board recommendation is for a maximum of 28 feet closest to Plymouth Avenue residents' backyards and 40 feet on the rest of the site. So just so...
And I just want to clarify, I said not to exceed 28 feet on the western side, which is Plymouth Avenue, and not more than 40
okay.
feet through the entire development. So that is what I stated for the record.
Oh, well,
just to be very, very clear.
Thank you. That's so wonderful to hear.
So,
thank you very much.
And what I'd also just like to say is that we also have the document entering into record. So we have the physical document that you're both
okay.
reading off of the same
yeah.
document. So,
and just a suggestion, TD, about the transportation demand management. You can go on sfgov.org, you can watch the presentation that was given to the Small Business Commission, and you can also watch the presentation that was given to the Planning Commission in July. and it's so all over this document, I think it's time for you to have a presentation. Thank you.
And I just would just like to remind us once again to please make sure that we submit our comments respectfully to one another, because I think it's really important. And if something that we have said, you feel that we've not accurately reflected it, to be able to say it in a way so that we can hear it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rita Evans, and I'm with the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association's Balboa Reservoir Committee. And I have several comments. One was mentioned previously, which is the lack of any mention of the dedicated shuttle in the document. And I want to specifically note that the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association has made that specific recommendation several times, and I believe it has been in a previous draft, and I'd sure like to know where it went and how to get it back in there. I also note in the transportation section that there's a lot of comment given to to bicycling and transit accessibility. Relatively little is given to walking, and I want to be sure that the issue of both accessibility and pedestrian safety are addressed. I really support Lisa Spinelli's suggestion that the order of the topics in the document be changed so that housing is followed by City College and then transportation, in order to signify the great importance that these topics have. I also would like to acknowledge, along with Westwood Park, that the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association also considers the issue of a significant amount of public space to be very critical. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ray Coos.
Pull that up. A little better.
I'm Ray Coots, and I'm with Sunnyside Neighborhood Association Committee also. And I just wanted to reinforce the order of the parameters in the document. I might also make a tweak to that housing shouldn't be number one, because we've been talking about nothing but housing as far as this document is concerned. So why it's being made a number one, it seems to me like it should be lower in the stack as following City College. So transportation being one, and congestion, as well as public realm for open space, followed by City College, then housing. My personal comment. The other thing that I want to point out is that under sustainability parameters, it's not 15, which one is that?
20?
Well, it's about the green roof.
Yes.
Okay, 4B is in bold.
Page 22.
There's an inconsistency with that one, and I believe it's 1C. The 1C under sustainability. We should be maximizing solar's roofs. There's more to be gained by not producing more CO2 and generating energy that way than sequestration by a few green patches on a roof. The greenhouse gases being sequestered would be far less. The other thing is a point on page 15 under, let's see, the transportation, 2F. The fifth bullet seems a little awkward to me. Improve neighborhood mobility and access during construction. So it's going to get better than it is already. You may want to relook at that one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good evening. Muriel Parento. I'm the Department Chair of Disabled Students Programs and Services. I've worked for City College for 22 years. I want to strongly object about this process where they mention City College, but I don't see a whole lot of emphasis on the impact of taking away parking is going to have on City College and the surrounding neighborhoods. Okay, so You also need to take in consideration parking for a limited amount of folks that are going to be using the Performing Arts Education Center. The PAIC was twice approved by SF voters, and it is on the City College Facilities Master Plan. The PAIC will be built. Parking is not optional as a commuter school. Thousands of working students, working parents, and part-time faculty are rushing in and out each day. I'm hearing here today some inference that if we limit the parking, people would use public transit. We force them to use a public. Where is the data on that? My experience is older students and disabled students and folks having a hard time are going to go somewhere else, or they're not going to go to school. So I'd like to see data that you think someone's going to take some other form of transportation. Bicycles work for small segments of the population, but especially do not work for students with disabilities, older students, students traveling with kids. They need parking in order to come to school. Yes, we need BART shuttles, we need bike lanes, we need better pedestrian access, and I also want to bring to your attention, a shuttle is a great idea. We need a lot more than one, because students take the, right, their students take their cars from one center to another, from Mission to Chinatown to downtown. So we need a shuttle system that goes between all the centers. We're not just talking about BART to Ocean. We need a real study on the impact on the area. We need a thorough transit study. City College's enrollment has been driven down by the actions of the ACCJC, but we're completely committed to building it back up. Free City College is coming. Other places in the U.S. with free community college have surges in enrollment. So check, Tulsa achieves, Oregon Promise, Tennessee Promise, they all have significant enrollment. Without more parking, this committee will be killing City College's enrollment. Thank you.
I just want to remind everybody that this, I appreciate the comments, and again, this is about making sure the document hangs together, it's feedback based on the actual document collectively, and not just reporting the part that you care about. Don't you love that I said that for you, Monica?
Monica Collins, SNA. I don't work for City College now, but I'm here to support City College any way I can. To me, you know, the elephant in the room is we cannot ignore City College. We ignore City College and the needs of the school at our peril. I want to thank Ray and especially Muriel for what they said, so this should be pretty brief. I also believe personally that construction here should be union-made, union-built, and no two-gate systems. I think this is very important. What you don't want is a lot of labor strife here on your construction sites. I support the PAIC. And for reasons Muriel already stated, I support the parking at City College. Thank you.
Okay, hello, I'm Theodore from Excelsior. And I think when we consider how these things come together, we should consider not just the entire neighborhood, but the entire world. We are, as a species, we are using too much carbon. We're sprawling out over too much of the wild spaces. So I think that the houses should be at least considered to be taller than neighboring houses, maybe like a couple stories. That's not terrible. And for transportation, it's important not to have too much, too many parking spaces, too many cars, because we can't support as a road, we can't support that many cars, and as a species, we can't support too many cars. And for sustainability, also, don't like the green roof. It's nice to have sustainability type things that are like little decoration on the side, and maybe have a green roof for decoration, but in terms of reducing the carbon impact of our species, I think we could get much better by increasing the density of the living spaces. Thank you.
Madeline Mueller, faculty at City College. I'm sorry I didn't write down page numbers. I was trying to, but one page number I had, and maybe the specific one on page 5, when you talk about couple of you talked about the neighborhood properties. Yes, please at least add with Wilmerding and Ruby at least to that list. They're immediate neighbors, and that would be easy to do. In general, however, as people have said, many of you and I agree. It all hinges, John used the word, it hinges on transit. And the last time we did the data, 30 years ago, when they were going to put 30 houses in and do a little parking, we did the data. When we put the students all out into transit, it crashed the systems. There aren't enough munis to talk about carbon footprint, and there aren't enough BART stops, and it congested the streets terribly. We did the research. We got to do the research again. When Supervisor Yee came here several meetings ago, he said, you know, if we can't solve this problem, it's dead in the water. Is that what he said? It's a colorful statement, but, you know, it meant, well, non-starter. I know something colorful. So we've got to do the data. We've got to figure out. We've made the Twitter shuttles go off from downtown because it made too much congestion. We've just, to move a college the size of the city of Hercules in and out, it's the way it must be done. It takes a lot of road space and a lot of transit machinery. We've got to do the data. Two other very quick questions. My son went here years ago as an engineering student. We've been talking wind power forever, because you've noticed a lot of wind. He's now chair of the engineering department. They're still talking about it. There are many, many reasons why it just doesn't work out very well. This building was to have a spine of wind chambers. Didn't work out. Too much noise, too much pressure on the doors. It has to be really researched. But it is being, but so far no answers. Child care, we've always had, I've been here 50 years, we've always had child care facilities. The permanent one was across the way. It's now temporary in the last bit of information. What's over here is going to be temporary administrative bungalows, not a permanent structure.
Hello, I'm Jennifer from Sunnyside. I'd like to support what Lisa said about the preamble. Transportation City College need to be of a higher priority, and listed earlier also because Sunnyside Association supports, and their biggest wish is for larger open space, that we also support the 2 consecutive acres of open space. Thank you, Lisa, also for what you said about transportation. I'd like to add a little bit. Principle number 1 on page 12 of transportation, parameter D, it says parking should be managed by the SFMTA according to best TDM practices. Our best TDM practices appropriately modified for a community college that continues to be a commuter school? Is there an understanding by the SFMTA that a TDM solution for one circumstance won't be the same for others? Is there an appreciation of City College's tenuous position and the importance of raising enrollment? Then for Transportation Principle 2, on the top of page 15, does not provide, and this was mentioned by Lisa, thank you for bringing it up, a consistent way for electric cars to charge overnight, and is therefore inconsistent with Transportation Principle 2, parameter E, bullet 2. The second bullet states making electric vehicle parking safe and convenient, as well as lowering barriers to installing future electric vehicle charging stations. Studies by the Idaho National Laboratory show that 82% of charging of the all-electric Nissan Leaf is done at home. If an electric outlet is not provided with every parking space in the parking garage, this development would not only block the future use of cleaner vehicles, it will encourage residents to buy the most polluting automobiles. It is far more expensive to retrofit a building after it has been built than to incorporate conduit from the beginning. Then page 15, principle 2, parameter F, bullet 2. Missing is specific language mitigating the impact of proposed bicycle infrastructure improvements on auto, van, truck, and emergency vehicle access to and from freeway ramps, as well as commercial interests along the Ocean Avenue corridor. Infrastructure changes should not conflict with City College Principle 2, parameter D, that states allow for safe, comfortable, and convenient pedestrian, bicycle, and car travel between City College and the Balboa Reservoir Project, with particular attention to connections to Balboa Park Station. And then sustainability, pages 20 to 22. I'll talk about that later. Thank you. I'll submit that separately. Thank you.
Can you submit? You didn't write it also?
I will.
Great.
It's great to get everyone also to submit their comments in writing, because it's a lot easier to do the edits. Thank you.
Bob Byrne, SNA Balboa Reservoir Committee. Good evening. I'm on page 3, housing, principle 1, parameter A. What if the land values do drop significantly? Have provisions been made? for that? Does it make sense to have somebody, affordable housing for people who make 120, 150% of the AMI? I'm on page 10, urban design. Principle 2, parameter C. Does this mean 2 to 3 stories across from Reardon High School? What about 4 and 5 stories across from Avalon?
Sorry, Bob?
6 and 7 stories across.
Bob, Bob, go back. After Reardon. Just after Reardon.
After Reardon. Mm-hmm. 4 and 5 stories across from Avalon.
Thank you.
6 and 7 stories across from the science building. 3 to 5 stories across from this multi-use building. The Performing Arts Center is supposed to be 2 stories high. It's not going to be built. I don't think it will be built before this takes place. Are we going to hide it, what should be a beautiful building behind taller buildings? I'm still on page 10, urban design now, principle 2, parameter F. What are considered distractions views from above? For example, some people might like solar panels, but they may not be attracted to others. So they may have different opinions here. Do you want houses high up on the hills to be able to minimize use of solar panels because they think high maintenance living roofs are prettier? Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Jonathan Randolph from the Ingleside. Thank you, everybody, for your hard work. I'd like to respectfully disagree with Kate's, basically with almost everything that she said. When she said the parking, 1-to-1 parking ratio is important, that's directly in conflict with congestion management. You know, the more people park here, the more traffic there is, and that's also what you don't want. And we don't need a 500-unit max in our parameters, I also disagree with Ray's statement that the housing should be like the last parameter, like the last principles. I think it should be still be number one because that's what we're here for. Under urban design, well, when the TDM presentation was made, we came to there were interesting statements that were made that these principles should be about values rather than about specific details, right? And on that note, I think that the urban design parameters should be changed to not necessarily say that the maximum height should be 25 feet or 65 feet, but, you know, it should be something that we value rather than just specifying a number, because, you know, it would make more sense to say we want the apartments to not shadow the Westwood Park neighbors, or we want the bulk of the buildings not to be too great compared to the other buildings in the neighborhood. I think just saying, you know, 28 feet or 65 feet is probably a little bit too prescriptive. And for all the people that are saying that this is a commuter school and that therefore parking is really, really important, I agree that some people need parking. However, right now we don't have a means test, or we don't have a need-based system of parking. Everyone who wants to park here for $3 a day can park here for $3 a day. So it's like saying that, it's like when you look at the grocery store and corn's on sale for $5 for a dollar, and there's tons of people, you know, crowding around the corn because it's so cheap. That doesn't mean that there's too many people. That doesn't mean there's too many shoppers. It just means the price is too low. So when you say, when you examine the existing demand, that also has, you know, that depends on the existing price. And if you just raise the price and make it more a need-based system, then fewer people will need to park here. Thank you.
I also want to thank you all. I know it's a tremendous amount of work.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm just working now. Oh, I'm sorry. Laura Weston Park. Thank them for their work. Also, in a broad sense, I think I just want to remind everybody that the CAC was originally put forward because Norman Yee had neighbors screaming at him that the neighborhoods were basically railroad. So, yes, all these other things are considerations, but the neighbor
this exists because of neighbors' concerns. And I really appreciate, Lisa, what you were saying at the beginning about this has to fit with the neighbors, because city policy also says that. You can't just, oh, there's empty space. Oh, what can we put in that empty space? It's not an empty space. It's in a context. 40-foot high buildings, no big employers like Mission Bay and SoMa, where you have people can bring a walk to work from their high rises because you've got so many employers around there. They have, Mission Bay's got the open space of the bay. District 7 is really low in terms of its amount of open space. So, of course, the residents from here want the public land to have some open space. I don't know if I said it correctly. The planning department, I understand, gets 90% of its funding from developer fees. So, of course, they've got their ear to the developer needs. That's understandable. But again, city policy says it's got to fit with the neighborhood. And I feel like this RFP does not address the main concerns of the main stakeholder. What everybody has said about the City College parking, there is no guarantee here about City College student parking, and there should be. And then in terms of the neighborhood, there's no talk of a density limit.
Hello, Corey Smith on behalf of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. Reiterate the last couple of folks. Kudos to all of you for coming up here. And I know you're hearing differing and sometimes completely conflicting opinions on things and trying to sort through all of that. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. Shocking housing parameters. I love the 100%, 120% rather, AMI number that's in there. Over the last 25, 30 years, the percentage of San Franciscans that fit between 80 and 100%, 120% rather, of AMI has actually been cut in half. We're really losing a lot of middle-class families, middle-class folks, so expanding that out to a high number, I think is a really, really fantastic idea. A little bit further down, love the goals for 50% or higher affordability on site. I would encourage the city and work with us in whatever way we can to try to find public financing strategies to make that happen. But I think there is a lot of writing on the wall for both the state and the federal government that they do want to get out of the subsidized housing game. On the conservative end, it's about $600,000 to produce an affordable unit. Unfortunately, the financing, we're not seeing it presently. If public financing isn't available, I really encourage the group to look at increased heights to get that 50% affordable on site so we can make sure that this is a socioeconomically diverse community. Reiterating Robert and John and a number of other people, connecting this area with the BART station, making sure the entire area feels like one community has to be a high goal.
Sorry, say that again? Making sure the whole area feels?
To make the entire area feel like a one community. So everything's connected, and there's lights, and there's walkways, and you can walk, and you can bike, and you know, a lot of different options. And then the parking ratio, 0.5, it's visionary, it's progressive. Future environmentalists will thank you for that. Get the transportation out at the same time, and I think it's a win for everybody. Thank you so much.
Good evening. My name is Christopher Campbell. I live in Westwood Park, and I will reiterate what everyone has said as well, thanking you all for the amount of effort and time you've put into this, and I think the document hangs well together. I agree. I think that transportation and the impact that it has on the community should precede the housing as well, although I know that's really generally the purpose that we're here. And then I wanted to address page 22, specifically about the ecology and greening. There's some documentation that's available that the Department of the Environment has worked with the PUC, Rec Park, a number of other agencies on developing plants that are appropriate for different regions throughout San Francisco. And it's called SF Plant Finder. And that often addresses specific needs for habitat and to develop connector properties that could be part of an entire system where it can go from San Bruno Mountain to Mount Davidson to Twin Peaks
and then continuing on for both resident and migratory animals. And I don't know if that's something that you're interested in. I could read the first paragraph of it, or if you want to just document that. You got it, okay. But I would appreciate that, in that the concerns for the ecology be forefront, and that we don't plant succulents and other plants that may look very attractive and are indeed drought tolerant, but that we start planting more of the infrastructure that existed here that was within this small little basin, and the importance that the basin represented as well. But I certainly appreciate all the effort that you've put so far into this as well.
Okay, so thank you everyone for your thoughtful and detailed feedback. Really appreciate it. So what's going to happen now is Philip will be taking all of the notes, and what? Oh, we have to take a break. Yes, it's time for the break.
Are you much longer?
Yeah, we've got about 4 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So what we'll do is that we'll come back at the big hand on the 8, we'll give you 12 minutes. We'll come back at 7:40, and then we'll start to talk about the next steps in the process. And thank you again very much. Thank you.
I mean, it's a bad thing. And if they want me to say thank you, you're fabulous, that could be 3 minutes.
Really? Yeah. You could have cut that thank you part out. Like, don't go into that.
I mean, thank you, you're fabulous, takes 30 seconds, right?
It totally does. Are you going home?
I am. I got another place to go.
Oh, God. See ya.
Yeah, so I just totally understand.
What we've been doing here for the last year, and so now we want to start putting some meat on those bones and going into some more detail about what that process will entail. So I think that's kind of a two-part conversation. I'm going to start today and give an overview, and then as there are questions and clarifications, we can get into even more detail next time. So I just want to start by going through what the big steps are. We've been saying, you know, RFP and RFP process as kind of a shorthand for this whole process. And you know, I think it really started a year ago when the CAC got created and charged with writing these development parameters that are going to become the meat around what the development and the development proposals should entail. So we really see that as the start, and then when they get wrapped up, which hopefully will happen at the next CAC meeting or another time soon, that's when we can really start soliciting interest from prospective development partners. So the first step of that is to issue, and these are steps that are really typical for City of San Francisco processes around really big projects and really big pieces of land, to start with actually a request for qualifications that focuses less on the proposal and really on whether prospective developer partners have the experience and the ability to successfully complete the project. So that's both around their financial capability, their staff's capability, whether they have proven experience working in active communities, working in cities like San Francisco with complex regulatory environments. And then that document will also include a lot of background, including what kind of the other plans and laws and districts in the local area are. It'll walk through the process, and it'll include all of the parameters that we've come up with. So the submittals that prospective developers submit will really focus on showing us that they're qualified, and then there'll be an evaluation panel that goes through a set of criteria to actually evaluate whether each respondent has the various qualifications. And I'll go into kind of what we're envisioning as those criteria later on, but just broadly, there's a scoring process that strives to be as like systematic and objective as possible. And typically that panel includes city staff with expertise from a bunch of different departments who have kind of the technical skills and knowledge and background to understand what really qualifies someone to succeed at this kind of endeavor. So in this case, we think it could be a combination of PUC planning, my agency, OEWD, Mayor's Office of Housing, and of course on the transportation side, MTA. And so after that scoring process happens, the top scoring respondents, you know, the ones that really do demonstrate that they're qualified, are invited to participate in an RFP where they submit real detailed proposals. And you know, the big reason we do this as a two-step process is because putting together one of these proposals is an incredibly time and resource intensive process. It takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money for these prospective teams and prospective firms. And so, you know, out of respect for them, we don't want to encourage people to put all that time and those resources in when it's unlikely that they would get selected, or it's not possible for them to be selected because they don't have kind of the baseline qualifications to get the project executed.
Now, Emily, could you separate out from the qualification?
From the qualification stage to the proposal phase, what they're being graded upon, they're being scored upon, is it much, like, where do the parameters come into play? Because it's on that first page.
Yeah.
So
that's fine. We can skip to kind of, if you flip the page over, and I guess in some ways these are out of order. So this is what we're thinking about, what the RFQ evaluation criteria would be, to give you a sense of how you kind of start high level and then break it down and how kind of points are allocated across different criteria. So, you know, they break down broadly into three big categories. Experience, so having a track record completing similar projects, proven ability to work with communities and work with public agencies. Capacity, so both the financial capacity to put resources into the project and obtain capital from other funding sources to fully fund the project, and also having a qualified team of staff members and consultants. We do want to include the parameters and kind of a high-level vision in the RFQ, even though it's really the focus is on being qualified. And so we want to structure it in such a way that the respondents submit really high-level visions of what they could envision at the site, but we're going to ask the panel less to kind of rank or rate the, you know, what the best visions are, and more to say, Is this a developer who understands and respects the parameters, is meeting them all, and striving actually to exceed them? Are they generally kind of set up for success? Are they proposing a project that seems generally feasible? Are they being creative? Are they being innovative? So that's where kind of this very high-level proposal and the parameters would come in the RFQ. But then once that pool gets narrowed down to the most qualified proposers and we get into the RFP, that's where we emphasize the proposal and the parameters even more. We have not really gotten into the meat of what exactly the criteria would be, but in general, it would be about adherence to the development parameters, feasibility, and kind of the feedback that we get from the community on those proposals. So what we're envisioning in terms of community feedback, which is not something that the city typically does in these RFPs, but we want to give it a try here because there's just been so much attention and so much interest, is to have those proposers come and present their proposals publicly, solicit feedback both in the meeting and in writing, after the meeting or for those who weren't able to attend, and actually have that set of feedback inform some of the scoring metrics that the panelists on the evaluation panel take into account. And so they would go through, the panel would go through like a similar rubric of really specific criteria to make sure, again, it was adhering to the parameters and the feedback and looking at feasibility. And then the top scoring proposal in that process would be selected to move forward. And what moving forward really means, that's the next step, is entering into exclusive negotiations with SFPUC. So they would negotiate an exclusive negotiating agreement with the PUC, and the main term in that is that PUC agrees not to be talking to other prospective partners. That they're committing, as long as everyone is moving forward in good faith and wants to continue working together, PUC is making that commitment that they're going to work with that developer partner. So just to conclude, I'm showing this timeline again that we've seen a lot. You can see there's kind of a yellow box around the RFP developer selection piece, kind of showing where it fits into our whole timeline and all the different ways that we do public input as part of this process. So after the developer is selected, the CAC meetings and community design meetings as well will continue up through several years of refining a proposal and a design for what's really going to be developed, also with the parameters in mind as the foundation for that, and then going through the environmental review process. After that is where the final regulatory approvals happen. So the proposal is going to have to go to the Board of Supervisors and a bunch of other boards and commissions, so certainly the Planning Commission and the SFPUC Commission. And these kinds of agreements, these kinds of project approvals typically go to a lot of other agencies as well. So that is the process. We are moving through it. We have a ways to go. Thanks.
And remember, please state your name.
No, it's an excellent suggestion, Anita.
I said it just because I'm not going to remember it yet.
I just want to go over again the community input process once the final parameters are forwarded to staff for the RFP. Where is the community process exactly going to be? Is there going to be like a blackout in a sense because where there's a 2-3 month period where you're going to be requesting qualifications, what is there going to be any space for the community in that process?
Yeah.
And then going forward, where is the community process then? How is that going to work?
So I think in terms of how frequently the CAC wants to continue to meet and what you guys want to talk about, kind of as we're going through the selection process, I think we work with you guys and the chair and see kind of what would be most useful, or if you could break, or how, you know, how we want to do that.
And just as a follow-up, how much is there a confidentiality piece to this whole thing? And so if the CAC, for example, had meetings for an update, could you be able to update the community, or where would the community's input be?
So in terms of the RFQ process, I think because a lot of what would be submitted for that process is a developer's financial information, that would certainly be confidential. So I think our updates there would focus on kind of where, you know, how the process is moving along. For the RFP, what we're going to do is ask the developers to, you know, there will be kind of confidential financial stuff in those responses as well, but there will be this big proposal piece that they'll prepare in such a way that there isn't, you know, sensitive proprietary information. So that can be presented publicly, and that's where we have the discussion and get feedback.
Robert Mueller again. Emily, I have a specific question, and then I have kind of a qualitative comment.
Okay.
After you go through the RFQ process, do you have a sense of how many would be invited back to do a request for proposal? Are we going to be looking at 5, 3, 1?
So, you know, looking at how past processes have worked, so like how the port did their selection for Mission Rock and Pier 70, it was typically 3, and I think that that's what we would target as well. I think we would be really, frankly, this is a really tall order that we've set out, and so to have 3 really qualified proposers wanting to do it, that would be a fabulous outcome.
Now, my qualitative comment is, I really want to commend staff for having development vision at the front end as it applies to getting requests for qualifications. And I wish we could write things like in here, like proposal will knock your socks off, or something like, you know, a demonstrable record of award-winning projects, or has done similar infill, large-scale development, you know. So you can begin through the RFQ process, see up front where the passion is, you know. The last thing I'd like to see is a developer that's just going to pull off from the shelf something that, oh, this looks like something we did in St. Louis. That would not work for us. So I don't know how to convey that in the RFQ process, but I encourage you to be doing that, and I'm glad to see it this far.
So, you know, I'm being very careful not to say anything that would privilege a developer that could be sitting here today, because, you know, we want to release everything all at once for people to see. But I will say that it is standard practice across the board in these RFQs to ask for example projects and to, you know, in the rubric to say that the example projects need to be comparable, and the comparability is important.
Would you actually be visiting some of these as you know, they start saying what you've done?
I wish. You know, if they were local, sure. Yeah. I think, you know, to be honest, projects of this scale are uncommon enough that as staff who have been in this field for a while, I have a feeling that if they're local, we may know them already.
Got the rat here. This is Bridget Davila. Anyway, I wanted to ask a couple of things, and I'm sorry if you said this. I got distracted because my husband just asked where the diapers were.
It was.
We've gone through this RFQ process that Board of Trustees has with other property. And one of the things that I wanted to know is what kind of committee is reviewing all of the proposals, all the RFQ proposals, and because that's the process that we went through. We had a committee with all the stakeholders that were looking at the different developers that had submitted an RFQ. Many drop out at that point, too. And then the other thing was looking at it from the point of view that Robert just mentioned, and looking at the passion and the unique aspect that that particular developer would bring, which is, I think, something that we're all interested in here. But I don't want to shortchange the fact that we do need someone who has the economic wherewithal and a proven track record of getting projects like these off the ground.
I have a question.
John Liston again. Kate was asking about where the community fits in. When these proposers come to us, will they be coming to us to present these their qualifications?
Yes.
Where the panel you speak of?
No.
Okay.
The selection panel is typically staff who have kind of expertise in working with developers in this area, following the parameters and the scoring rubric and the feedback that we hear as guidelines. So, you know, whether it is a CAC meeting or a broader community meeting that's structured differently, where kind of the presentations and the feedback happen, we'll have to think about.
So you'll probably have some meetings in closed session over in City Hall, and then you'll come and
yes.
propose or
I think that no. I think what would happen is that the presentations and the feedback would happen, and then the panel would convene and take all of that feedback into account.
Okay.
In the convening.
All right.
I'm a little confused.
So, this is Bridget Davila. Will we just be getting the top three after you've looked at all of them, or will there be another committee that's involved with narrowing it down to the top three?
So we had envisioned focusing on the top three, which are the qualified proposers. I think, you know, we can think about how, you know, if there is a way to engage people in the RFQ piece, it would be, to be honest, a really limited piece of that submittal because so much of it is the confidential stuff. But I think we'll think about it as staff and kind of come back with some thoughts.
Okay, because it did give the Board of Trustees a lot more confidence knowing that there was a range of people who looked at all the submissions for RFQs, and we felt very comfortable then being able to look at the three and being able to choose from that three.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. We'll come back and talk about that next time.
That brings up a follow-up question. Okay, so there would be some presentation to the CAC.
To the
community. Okay. Right, with the community. And there would be feedback, both public comment and comment from the CAC.
Mm-hmm.
Where would the Board of Trustees, would there be another presentation to the Board of Trustees of City College, because this is such a entwined process?
I think what would make the most sense is to have a big presentation and invite everyone. You know, it's typically for these things, the proposers will have architects from across the country that they'll be flying in to present. So logistically, I think it absolutely makes sense. Not just the Board of Trustees, but I know in the resolution that Bridget's going to talk about, the board designated the Capital Projects Planning Committee at City College to be kind of their eyes and ears on this project. So we want to invite them and, you know, other stakeholders. I think they need a bigger room.
And there would be another public presentation before the PUC, possibly?
So the PUC commission would... they would get involved a little bit later and actually review and approve the exclusive negotiating agreement.
Right. Okay, but would there be a public presentation of them at all?
At the commission?
Mm-hmm.
We had not envisioned that. I think
just curious.
PUC staff would be engaged in the RFP evaluation panel,
mm-hmm.
and so they would be kind of the commission's eyes and ears there, and then, you know, ultimately, the commission would have veto power in approving the ENA.
So I would just raise that it would be interesting to think about how, as we continue to build out this, the timeline and exactly like what's the role of where does community fit in, and be really clear about what our expectation is of community, so that that way people know in advance and when the meetings will be. And it might make sense that if, you know, having been involved with a couple of these projects in the past, different, very different but similar ilk, where you fly in your experts that are part of your national group, that maybe what would have to happen is that after you've done the presentations and people provided their general feedback, we may need to have specific meetings with City College, the City College team, to say, okay, what is your feedback from City College's perspective, or to hear from key stakeholder groups to really get their feedback, not just the one-off feedback of people coming and making public comment, but to have a way to have that feedback bubble up so we really get...
I think that would be terrific to get the CA's help in really kind of owning the, you know, all of the different things that come in.
Thanks. So any other questions from the group? So we can now open it up to public comment. If anyone has any public comment to Emily's presentation and anything, anything that we have to say.
I just wanted to ask you about the scoring rubric. Is that for the beginning process and for the down to three, or is it just for the down to three?
Can you hear it? No.
We couldn't hear
it. It would be for both. There would be two different rubrics, each focused on what we were looking for, you know, what makes the best RFQ versus what makes the best RFP. Different criteria for each of those questions, but there would be a numerical rubric for each one.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, can she repeat it?
I asked the scoring rubric that she talked about. Would that be for the big group and for the three, or for both? And she said it would be for both. Can that be A, made public, that scoring your scores, how you score, and B, can the community, the CAC, have input on creating that score?
So I can answer both of those. I want to actually hear everyone's questions and then circle back and answer them.
That's good.
Okay,
Madeline Mueller, faculty. I just wanted to underscore that, yes, the more transparency, the more people involved, absolutely the better. We took 2 years of intensive research for the RFQ for the PAC building and this entire, what was called the upper reservoir that we got given to us or traded with the PUC 30 years ago. But it took a lot of work and a lot of people. We had community members and all the functions of the school and students. We really spent 2 solid years and we got the best in the business. You know, our people were just this year voted the best architects in the nation. So it really helps to do the best. And what I don't want to see happen is for that not to be recognized, because that's what I'm going to go out, many of us want to go out and get private donor money, because this is a very, very well-considered project that's being impacted. I don't want, somebody said, there's a beautiful building here, prize-winning national building already in place after a very inclusive and very extensive RFQ process. Don't want the building buried, because then we won't get our donors. We have 30 billionaires living in San Francisco. We'll name it after every one of them. Give us the money. But I do hope that you understand that this project that's being proposed has to keep that all in mind, because it all serves San Francisco. We are supposed to be a focus in this part of the city for the arts. This is the vision that Pfluger had, that building. That we are the southern entrance to San Francisco. We welcome people through the arts. We welcome the Pacific Rim people through seeing the marvelous building on the hill. That all has to be part of this package.
I'm Ellen Wall, faculty. These meetings drive me a little crazy, because about 90% of the people who got up before this said they didn't want housing. Housing should be the last consideration. And now when these folks get up, somehow everything is lost except the housing. And we need to be educating students, not building housing. And I don't know what happens. It's just, where does it go? Why don't you respond to what people have been saying? I don't get it. You must educate, not build a housing for a few hundred people. You must educate the thousands of people into the future. Thank you.
Okay, so Theodore from Excelsior. I think there should be more housing, so
this is not a conversation about housing. It
anyway.
Is about responses to the process.
So,
please.
So I think, let's see, we shouldn't try prejudice against plans just because they're somewhat cookie-cutter. A lot of the neighborhoods here that we think of as nice now started out as cookie-cutter designs with minor variations. We probably shouldn't do Louisiana designs here. That's probably not earthquake-safe. But we should... Consider nice solid designs too. We shouldn't just go for something that's impressive and artistic and maybe leaks in winter.
I think we're all okay with the idea of no leaks in the winter. Okay, Emily.
Yeah.
I think we could all agree, right?
Yeah, so I'll just briefly respond to Laura's questions. In terms of the contents of the rubric and making those public. So we've provided an outline of what we're envisioning for the RFQ rubric on the slide printout that we gave you. And I think, I don't know if we will be ready to share something along those lines at the September CAC meeting, but we will share it at a future CAC.
I just want to underscore the difference between the criteria and the rubric for the RFQ versus the RFP, because I think you said something really important, is that for the RFQ, it's really about seeing how they responded to the parameters and how they're thinking about it. So it's more about almost more of the how than the what. I know that might sound very subtle, but I think there's a difference about like how they're thinking about it versus the actual design they're coming up with, because you want to see, did they really read it? Did they take into account all the things that we've laid out in the seven parameters? You know, did they come back with gondolas and shuttles and, you know, address the parking? Like, and how well they actually responded to the criteria that we've laid out in the parameters, right?
I'm nodding vigorously.
Yes,
yeah.
So it's more, so get in your head, it's about the how, and then we actually do the RFP and it gets down to the three, it's more about the what. So what's it going to look like? Okay, so with that, what I'd like to do now is I'd like to turn it just to public comment. Does anyone have a comment that they need to make that is not related to anything that we've spoken tonight? So we're going to take public comment, and then we're going to go to... Actually, you know what? I want to flip this, because I think what Bridget has to say, I think, is going to be important, and there might be more public comment after she speaks, and that'll give the audience more ample time to provide feedback. So Bridget, let me turn it over to you to talk about City College and the MOU.
I'm sorry, the rest of them.
Okay, so we did pass a resolution at the last Board of Trustees meeting on 6/23/16. I think the last one.
Two weeks ago,
I'm sorry.
So 7/23.
The point is that we've had several iterations that I cannot even keep track anymore. And so what I'm going to mention right now are some of the important things that we included in this that I was referring to at the beginning when I talked about what I didn't see in the parameters document that we're reviewing. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It should be up on the website soon. I'm surprised it's not up there already, but I will give you the parts that I think definitely relate to the parameters here. The first one is that City College cannot grant the city a roadway between the multi-use building and the planned Performing Arts and Education Center. but we are, the Board of Trustees can exchange one or more roadway accesses and easements only if the city reimburses CCSF. Two, the city's Balboa Reservoir project should be at least 50% permanent affordable housing with a preference for dedicated faculty and staff housing. The Board of Trustees acknowledges that there's significant engagement will be needed in order to do this. So we understand what we're taking on when we talk about having some kind of dedicated housing. I realize now that when I'm reading this that this is the previous one, but anyway, let me move forward. In order to avoid the loss of enrollment from students who must commute by car and loss of parking for audience members of performances at the PAEC, City College requires important mitigation measures to offset the loss of existing parking. So one of the mitigation efforts is a flexible parking structure. And by flexible, that refers to structures that accommodate transitions from parking alone to a range of other uses as parking ratios may decline with mixed-use developments. If that's the case, then we can use the parking structure for other things. If it's not the case, then we will have plenty of parking to support the PAEC and City College. The other ideas for the parking structure included having a bicycle rentals there, and also having electric car chargers there, and also having shared cars there as well to provide enough access for people who need cars. Also, a comprehensive transit study with input from CCSF. I mentioned that we seem to have a lot of transit studies that we keep talking about, and I'm not even sure we're always talking about the same ones. So I want to make sure that we are and that we get all that data together for that. And also, some of the other transit alternatives would include Muni and BART passes for all students and residents of any housing structure built on the Balboa Reservoir property, and car and bike sharing options for residents, neighbors, and members of the CCSF community. Four, the city shall prioritize including open, accessible common space through the development to be used as parks, gardens, playgrounds, or other types of open space that will enhance the CCSF community and neighborhood. And this is mentioned in light of the fact that City College is actually a park. So Madeline brought this to my attention first, and I found out that it was supposed to be an open campus where people can come, and they do. They come and they walk their dogs or go all over the campus or cut through to Ocean Avenue. So keeping up with that and maintaining open spaces that will enhance the open space that's already here now. Five, coordinate with the CCSF master plan. And I thank you for going to that facilities management open house. I was in Los Angeles, I couldn't make it, but very interested that the PAEC received a lower level of concern. We'll have to work on that. But anyway, the idea is that this would all be in coordination with the CCSF master plan. Unfortunately, that master plan is at least a year behind, but we're up and running on it now, so we're in the process now. So it's going to have to be coordination of three different things at the same time. Coordination with the Balboa Reservoir development, coordination with the CCSF master plan, and coordination with the Balboa BART station. So there's a lot of things that are going on here right now at the same time. We want to make sure they're all coordinated. Also in coordination with the CCSF master plan, a new crosswalk on Ocean Avenue near the exit from Balboa BART station, which is used by thousands of CCSF students, staff, and faculty every day. And additional measures, the city must undertake additional measures to overall increase pedestrian and bicyclist safety. As a bicyclist coming up Ocean Avenue, I can tell you that it is very dangerous when cars are flying off the freeway. And that the City College of San Francisco Capital Projects Planning Committee, this is something that Emily mentioned earlier, It's already comprised of all City College stakeholders, and it's in the best position to review the Balboa Reservoir development in concert with the CCSF master planning now in progress and the Balboa BART station. So that is going to be the committee that will be looking at plans, reviewing plans, trying to coordinate with everything else. So instead of creating a new committee, we gave it to an existing committee that is already comprised of all the stakeholders. And last, be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees directs the Chancellor to communicate these priorities to the city and instruct the administration to ensure that City College of San Francisco's interests are acknowledged and recognized in accordance with the primary stated goals of City College's vision and mission statements to continue to provide an accessible, affordable, and high-quality education to all its students. I don't think I need to remind anybody of the role of City College here. The role of City College throughout the last 80 years has been incredible in terms of educating people that either would not have access to education and they've moved forward, or people being able to get certifications and being able to get jobs. It's really changed a lot of people's lives. So I know that it was mentioned that, that this is a very important thing to keep sight of, and I agree with it. I think we can do both, and I particularly am interested in making sure that we have housing for faculty, because that is something that is that would make us more competitive, that would help us in a lot of ways to provide that education for students. So now there's more to this resolution, but these are the key parts that are involved with the parameters here. So I'm happy to take any questions on this. Yeah.
A few questions. The flexible garage, that would be on City College property or in the reservoir, in our section of the reservoir?
It would be on our section of the reservoir. On your section.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our section is Balboa
right.
Reservoir.
The PUC owned or the City College owned?
Pardon?
The PUC section.
Yes.
Right. And how many car? How many?
I'm sorry.
Spots?
What was the answer to that question? Who owns it?
PUC.
PUC owns it.
Sorry,
and how, and what would be the? Can you envision like how many spots would be required, and what would be the footprint of the?
I don't know exactly till we do the transit demand management study. I mean, I think that that's what we want to do is mitigate any effects on our enrollment. So and make sure that we have plenty of parking for events at the AEC.
Yeah, just want to visualize how it's going to look.
Yeah.
How much space it's going to take. You mentioned transit passes. Would that be for students or for residents?
That would be for students and also for residents of the whatever structures there.
Okay, and that would come out. That would be paid for out of tuition fees or out of.
No, that wouldn't be paid for out of tuition fees. That would be paid for out of the development. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe BART.
Well, this has been done before. I'm not inventing this right now.
Right. I just know that the Gator Pass over at SF State is funded by...
Right. And so I don't know what will transpire in the meantime. We're kind of working on that, too, at the same time. So we might already have passes for students. I know they've been somewhat limited, but the point is that we want to make sure that everybody has access to transportation.
Any mention of the shuttle? In the resolution?
No, we did not mention the shuttle, but definitely open
it
to a shuttle.
It came up in all three breakout groups
mm-hmm. yeah.
last week.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So I just want to say that Bridget is going to provide you with the final version of the resolution. We're going to put it up on our CAC website, and I would actually encourage everyone to read it. I think you'll find that it really strongly articulates a vision, but at a high level. It doesn't go into the level of detail that our document has gotten into over the course of a year, but they're pretty complimentary. So I'll post it, and if people have questions. questions for Bridget at the next meeting or subsequent meetings, we can certainly do that then. But I think actually reading it will clarify a few things.
I'd also like us to think about, how do we do a better job? Do we need to create a web page within our structure for shared documents? So for example, the City College study of counts that came up with the 40% and the 20%. Like, we need one location where all of these materials can sit, and like, and if you can hover over it with your mouse, you get a little description of what it is. I know that might be beyond the technology of the city, but I think for next time, I think we should talk a little bit about, as information's coming in, to be able to share that in an intelligent way.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've really focused this year on being chronological and kind of tying materials to a date, but my sense is that that will become maybe less important than the content itself in this.
Well, especially because you're going to have, you have multiple groups working on things concurrently. Like, in some regard, it's kind of behooves us to say, let's put a lasso around it, and so we can see what we have and what we don't have, and then I think it'll also help us as we move down the road to really understand what the implications of things are, and that we're being data driven in how we're, you know, making decisions and how we're thinking about things. So that's so. Does anybody else have any other questions for Bridget? Can I open it now to public comment, either if you've got a question for Bridget or a general public comment? Hi, Laura.
Hi. Again, I just had one question. The email that I got from you, Jeremy, about the faculty and student housing, I understood, can you clarify for me, that you cannot have faculty or student housing for that group unless it is publicly owned housing. That it could not be privately owned, because that can only be by affordability. That you cannot target any certain group in a privately owned housing complex.
Can you respond to that? So, very broadly, the institution whose people are living in that housing would need to own the housing. So it would need to be City College owned housing in order for City College to be able to prioritize its people, whether they were students or employees. So that's, you know, when Bridget mentioned that there would need to be a lot of engagement from the college in terms of working out that structure, it's going to have, I mean, it's going to be a complicated structure. So, you know, we're
going
to all have to roll up our sleeves to figure out a way to do it.
And SFUSD has been working on this for 4 or 5 years now, right? And have it's a hard nut to crack. Yeah, so the sooner we get cracking at it, the better.
But it has been cracked.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I will quote somebody else. I'm sorry to read this. But is there a question? Mal Mueller, could we lease the land? It's just a question, like long-term lease, 100 years, that kind of stuff.
We actually talked about that at a previous meeting.
Yeah, and that's, I thought it had come up. I mean, I hear owning, and I thought, but we did talk about leasing, so there's flexibility. I think you all received an email from Chris Hansen, who couldn't be here, and it was a long email, and I hope it makes it to the record somehow. I would just quote what she said was the Board of Supervisors ordinance that set up the CAC, and it would be too long an email to read, but it says city agencies must receive input from individuals and communities that will be most directly impacted by the project, including residents, businesses, and educational institutions in the area immediately surrounding the site. I think we all know that. And then the other, the purpose of the advisory committee is to provide a community voice and function as a central clearinghouse for community input in the process of, as the city considers options for development of the site. Her email goes on with some particular issues that she feels maybe went beyond this definition or counter to it. I'm not going to read it all because it's too lengthy, but I hope that it makes it into the record somehow, because she couldn't be here.
Good, thank you.
Emily and Jeremy and Mike as well, I would like to compliment you for the parameters you've set up for this project. This is an excellent example of how city planning. The 65-foot height limit on this project, only on the east side, is about 50% higher than what's been recently built along Ocean Avenue. The typical height on residents in the adjacent area is 25 feet. That fits into the community just like oil mixes with water. The less than one parking place per unit. I mean, what kind of fairyland do you folks live in? I mean, this is outrageous. I realize nobody parks today. That's why you can't find a parking place anywhere. Incorporating all of these things together brings me to tell you what I said. City College is really being forced out of this. I must say, you're not going to like this, but I do have contempt for your organization because of the way we've been treated in the past. 30 years ago, when we had this matter before the electorate, I met with, I think her name was Barbara Smith, and I said, is there some way that we can come to a compromise? And her comment was, let us build the housing, give us a list of what you want. These are the kind of people we're dealing with.
Okay, Theodore from Excelsior. So the San Francisco County Transportation Authority does have a plan for the different departments to make this freeway off-ramp here much safer. And so that's not the reservoir thing. And personally, I would prefer a parking garage on the City College campus near the freeway off-ramp, because the school starts, all the cars are coming up Ocean and then turning onto Phelan. That makes it very uncomfortable for me as a bicyclist. So have the cars closer to the freeway, that seems better to me, if it's possible.
Hi, Jennifer from Sunnyside. This is actually directed at Brigitte, if you pronounce your name that way. You said that the issue of finding a way to provide housing for faculty and students has been cracked. Could you explain what you mean? Give us an example. Thank you.
Okay, well, our housing costs here are particularly outrageous. California's pretty much been hit across the board, and teachers' salaries have not kept up. And there are several examples of this. One is in San Mateo, and one is at UC Irvine, and one is at the school district in Los Angeles. And these are three of the models that I found that I'm looking at. There's actually more. So this has been done in different ways. Some are rentals, some you only get the equity out of it. You buy the home and you get the equity out of it, but you don't get any increased costs due to the property values rising. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. I do not say that it's going to be easy at all. I don't think so. It would be a lot easier for me just to walk away from it. But I think it's something that we really, really need, and I think the time is right to start focusing on this. And I think this property is uniquely situated for this too.
Good evening. This is Jonathan Randolph from the Hillside again. Thank you everyone for listening again. And I would like to I would like to encourage you to consider not only the needs of the people who are here and who are most vocal, but also the needs of the people who can't make it here, and the needs of the people who aren't around yet, you know, who are still students or who are still less than that. And you know, I think we should consider, we should have the foresight to see when something can't go on forever. Right? In a city, low-cost parking and automobile-based,
you know, private automobile-based transportation is basically something that we've enjoyed for the last couple generations, but it's not going to go on forever, and the city will become denser, or we will, you know, force out the people who can't afford to stay here when we force them not to build. And to the gentleman's point earlier, when he said that 65-foot buildings are would be inappropriate, I think in the parameters we should note, we should say what our values are. Our value isn't, you know, 65-foot or 55-foot or 85-foot. Our values are, how does it feel when you walk down the street? And when you walk down the street, the livelihood of the neighbor of the street doesn't necessarily correspond directly to how high the building is. What matters is how bulky it seems when you walk down the street, and behind the bulk, I mean behind the, you know, the immediate facade, there can be higher floors that don't really impact how, you know, how bulky the street feels. So I think, you know, a strict height limit is not necessarily what we want to put in our parameters. Okay, thank you.
Ellen Wall, faculty. Bridget, would have to see your cost analysis. I don't believe that it is cheaper to give, to build housing than to give the faculty a raise. And just think of the cost of building, of maintaining, because City College just got to own it, what you're proposing to be built. And I think that that is as expensive or more expensive than simply giving raises to faculty, and which is what needs to be done. Faculty need to have the opportunity to live where they want to, not be stuck with some prefab houses that may or may not be suitable. So I need to see your numbers before I think I would accept that. Thank you.
Francine Lebrano, Westwood Park. I'm just trying to kind of wrap my mind around all this meeting and where we've been and where we're going and where we'll end up. Because the 2009 Balboa Station Area Plan appears to have really been scrapped, because that whole thing took years and years. And does anybody know how much that environmental impact report cost? Because I think that would be a valuable thing that I would like to know. How much did that cost? Because we did that and went through all that. Now this whole thing has basically put that aside and gone off on this new direction. Now we're looking at this and saying, like, oh, okay, we're going to take between 4 and 6 months to do this qualifications and request for proposals, and then we've got this extended time frame. So in my mind, it seems to me that next year, the year after, whatever, all the work we've been doing here, all the comments we've been making are going to be for naught, because you can say, oh yeah, we're going to take these guidelines. But they already took the guidelines from the 2009 station plan and threw them aside. So, you know, when you're trying to think about this, you know, as I've been engaged in the whole process for years, you know, from the Balboa station forward, as many people have been, and so it seems kind of irritating to do all that work on the Balboa Station Area Plan and all the public comment, all the public meetings, and now that's all put aside. Now we got to do all this new changes, do a new environmental report, because we're all going to change it again. So, you know, although everybody wants to be committed and engaged and involved, it seems like every couple of years or every 5 years or whatever, all that we already did is all thrown aside, and then some new plan comes along. So what are we looking at here? Like, today is a meeting, and we end this meeting, and then where do we go from here? Do we have a 4 or 6 month hiatus where all this behind the scenes work is done, and we all go sit back and wait for you guys to come back? And then we have like another 2 years of meetings only to have all this changed again? I mean, it's getting hard to wrap your mind around all this. So again, I would like to know what the environmental impact report for the Balboa Station Area Plan costs. Why are we throwing that away? Do you know, Jeremy?
I don't know, Jeremy.
Well, will you find out? I think if we could have a different tone about it.
No, I'm just curious.
I'm the blank look on my face is I don't know, and I'm looking over to.
Well, that's why I'm turning him out.
So, so I would say.
I don't know how much it costs.
Yes. Are you able to find out?
I don't know, but I can
look. Give it a try.
If there are specific.
Well, I think that would be valuable information because why would we have spent all that money just to not pay attention to it?
Yeah, let's put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Yeah, if there are specific policies that you think you've ignored, then I'm...
Well, I would just, I mean, it does seem like we have scrapped the 2009 plan.
Okay,
Robert,
pardon?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't going to speak. Anita Theo Harris, let's report. First, I feel that Francine's tone was just fine.
Yeah, I don't see it.
There was nothing
Thank
wrong
you.
With it because perhaps you guys need to know we spent 5 years going to live Wilmerding week after week after week to assist and have community input in the 2009 Balboa Area Plan. And this was heart-wrenching for the 5 years because we didn't want, let's face it, people, you live in a nice little neighborhood and say, oh my God, 500 units. And then we all came along. We all realized, we all wanted to work with and not against. And now we've been asking about the 2009 plan. You read it and I don't know why it's relevant. I don't know why it's still not timely. And so as far as tone, you need to know that there are a lot of people here who, someone said the last time and you didn't chastise their tone and they said, well, people who have nothing better to do, they come here. We all have better things to do, but we all, just like you do, you obviously love your community or you wouldn't spend all of your volunteer time doing this. So I would like to know, I didn't even think of that. Let's find out what the 2009 Balboa Area Plan is and let's find out why it's not relevant to today. Thank you.
It would be helpful, I'm happy to look that up. It would be helpful to know what particular policies you think are being ignored.
Excuse me, Max, let me just give you one. Maximum of 500 units, and the plan itself says worst case scenario. I think that's a good example. Thank you. And I'd be happy to provide some more next time.
Okay, so with that, I think we're done. Thank you, everybody, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Just a reminder, September 12th is the scheduled next meeting.
Yeah.
So I'm